Wisconsin has an open U.S. Senate seat up for grabs this fall, and we have the latest poll numbers and the pollster who collected them. I'm Rob Ferret, filling in for Joy Cardine this week here on the Ideas Network. It's 7 minutes after 7 on Monday, June 25th. This is the State Capitol Report, and Charles Franklin will get us started this morning. He's a visiting professor of law and public policy at Marquette University and co-developer and contributor to pollsandvotes.com. Charles Franklin, good morning.
Good morning. Good to be here.
Good to have you up here again. Well, let's jump right into the poll numbers in that primary race, and let's stay on the Republican side at first. What were the results?
Yeah, it's interesting because this is an open U.S. Senate seat for the first time in quite a long time, and it's a very competitive race with four major candidates in it. What we found, though, first of all, was simply that former Governor Tommy Thompson is leading the race with 34% of the vote, followed by former Congressman Mark Newman at 16, businessman Eric Hovde at 14, Speaker of the Assembly Jeff Fitzgerald at 10. But maybe the most interesting bit is the undecideds at 25%. So that 25% could tilt the race dramatically, and it shows us just how little voters have really focused on the Senate race. The role of the recall, aside from everything else, was to suck all the air out of the Senate race. And so here, with less than 2 months to go until that primary election, an awful lot of voters haven't yet turned to focus on it.
How much of an advantage is name recognition for Tommy Thompson? Obviously, that's a name that people know very well here in Wisconsin. Not that the other candidates are nobodies, but they don't have that recognition.
No, it really shows up in the data as well. Former Governor Thompson is recognized and rated, meaning you can say whether you have a favorable or unfavorable view of him, by 84% of our sample. No other Republican reaches 50%. Rating for Mark Newman is the second highest at 48%, but for Fitzgerald it's only 40%, and for Hovde it's only 27%. So, you know, getting yourself known statewide is one of the most important things that all non-incumbent candidates have to do. And this is where, if the campaign had been running another 2 months, if we hadn't had the recalls to draw attention, I think all of these candidates would be better known. As it stands right now, with, like I say, just under 2 months to go, everybody except Thompson has still got a lot of work to do in reintroducing themselves or introducing themselves to voters statewide.
And they have less than 2 months to do that. How do they go from 0 to 60 in that time?
Well, that's the challenge. The easy answer is advertise, 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 and lots of campaigning. And I think undoubtedly we will certainly see that over the next 2 months. The other side of it, though, is also on the voters' side. If voters have been paying a lot of attention to the recall and are now taking a little downtime, I think that Republican primary voters will come to realize pretty soon that this Senate race is important and bearing down on us. And so on the voter side, I think voters will turn to paying attention to it as well. So it's not entirely on the candidates to introduce themselves. It's also naturally that voters will turn and start focusing on it as well.
Is there such a thing as election fatigue? Are voters saying, you know what, we've got this coming up in November. We've done the recall. I'm checking out, man. It's summertime. I'm going on vacation mentally.
I think there's undoubtedly a level of fatigue of, oh, my goodness, we have another one of these soon. But the flip side is, in our data, we don't see that. We have a Republican primary coming up, so let's focus on that. 92% of Republicans say they're certain they're going to vote in November. That doesn't sound like fatigue. Mm-hmm. And I think we'll see them and later Democrats. We don't have a Democratic primary in the Senate, so that's why we're focusing on the Republican side. So, you know, there may be a psychological burden there, but it has not shown up in the data in the form of reading less about politics, talking to friends and neighbors less. Those things have remained strong even after the recall.
Are we going to be more politically engaged in Wisconsin now?
Well, you know, one
forever.
One of the things, of course, is we're one of the highest turnout states in the country. We're routinely number two or three, sometimes four in turnout. And so we've always been a high turnout, high engagement state. The events of the last 18 months have certainly ratcheted that up to a great degree. And I suspect that those levels can't be maintained forever. But we broke the records for turnout in a governor's race in June. And so it's hardly the case that we've withdrawn from politics. We really are ramped up. And both parties realize, even for the presidential and likely the Senate race, that this is a year where turnout once again can be very, very important for who ultimately wins the elections.
Rob Ferret talking to pollster and political scientist Charles Franklin about the latest poll numbers in the race for the Wisconsin U.S. Senate seat and Wisconsin politics in general. We'll take your calls at 800-642-1234. Do you have a question or an observation about that Senate race? Give a call, 800-642-1234, or send an email, talk@WPR.org. Now, you also did head-to-heads in the race with matching each Republican candidate against Tammy Baldwin, Congresswoman Tammy Baldwin, the only major, the likely Democratic nominee for that Senate seat. How did that come out?
Yeah, you know, first of all, Baldwin is the second best known in these data. You know, Thompson at the highest at 84% recognition. But Baldwin's the only other one that passes the 50% mark. She's at 57% name recognition, though in her case, that's concentrated in the second congressional district in the Madison media market, which is true of the other three Republicans as well. So she has a ways to go on that name recognition, but not as much as the other Republican candidates would. But in the head-to-heads looking forward to November, Thompson leads Baldwin by 8 percentage points, 49 to 41. But the other three Republicans tie or trail Baldwin. So in a matchup with Newman, Baldwin and Newman are a tie, 44 apiece. Baldwin leads Fitzgerald by 6, 45 to 39, and leads Hovde by 9, 45 to 36. So I think the spread across the different matchups shows that this is likely to be a competitive Senate race as voters come to know these candidates, including Baldwin, better and better. And in the world of greater partisan polarization that we've talked a lot about this year, I think these races are likely to remain tight or even tighter, become tighter as we go forward.
Why do we see this really competitive Republican primary with four, I would think it's fair to say, plausible candidates, and only one major candidate on the Democratic side?
Well, it may in part reflect the Republican notion that having defeated Russ Feingold, Ron Johnson winning that seat in 2010, that there are opportunities to flip the Senate from Democratic control to Republican control, and Wisconsin would play a part in that. It's partly also that there are other options for Democrats. With Baldwin running for the Senate, that opens the option of running in the second congressional district here. Some are doing that. And finally, it reflects Baldwin's strengths as a candidate, especially as a Democratic nominee, that within the party, she's a very strong candidate and well-positioned. She's also had very good fundraising. And so this is a case of a strong Democrat emerging early, getting in the race early, one with the resources to do well, and well-positioned within the party. So I think those are the strong parts. One very interesting thing about Baldwin is this week she released her first campaign ad. And it's quite interesting because it focuses on Chinese unfair competition against the paper industry. And the entire ad is focused on her efforts with some Republicans in Congress to limit that competition. So it's interesting because it's an ad that says right from the beginning she wants to talk about the concerns of working people and businesses that aren't in southern Wisconsin but that are concentrated in northern and rural parts of the state. And so I think that's a very interesting first commercial to see from her.
Speaking of fundraising and running ads, we talked about the need to go from 0 to 60 on the Republican side by the August primary. Does somebody have an advantage in the money and advertising field?
Well, Eric Hovde is a self-funded candidate, supposedly has some advantages in that he can contribute substantially to his own campaign. You know, I think you have to say Thompson has the advantages. If you've been elected governor four times, it would be surprising if you didn't start with advantages. But the real question within the GOP is, does Tommy Thompson still represent the party that exists today rather than the party of the Republicans of the 80s and 90s? That's a debate within the party that's going on. Thompson certainly argues that he's a solid, strong conservative who can achieve goals in the modern party as well. I think we'll still see that. So far, that campaign has tended to be pretty positive with the candidates running ads about what they're for, and outside groups haven't really jumped in. When outside groups come in, it may turn more negative, and we'll see if the candidates themselves choose to turn more negative.
Well, I'll tell you, as someone working in the media, it's been, what, 6 or 8 months ago, I started getting emails from, I believe it was National Club for Growth, questioning Tommy Thompson's conservative credentials. At least some outside players have an interest in raising that issue.
That's right. And when Thompson first expressed an interest in the winter in getting in the race, there was some small advertising buys from Club for Growth saying why that was a bad idea. This is the division within the Republican Party of the new reborn conservative movement that came out in the 2010 elections through the Tea Party and other new movements. And that'll be an issue that the Republicans will have to figure out for themselves. Republican voters in the primary will have to decide that.
Rob Ferret here, filling in for Joy Cardine. I'm talking to Charles Franklin. He's a pollster. He does the Marquette Law School poll of Wisconsin politics. We're talking about, among other things, the U.S. Senate race. The poll also asked about whether we think the recall should change. We'll talk about that coming up. Today's weather, sunny and mild, highs mainly in the 70s. Cooler, of course, near Lake Michigan. Tonight, clear and cool with lows 45 to 52. Tomorrow, sunny and mild, highs in the 70s and low 80s, lows in the 50s. Looking ahead, it's going to warm back up. Wednesday, sunny and much warmer, highs in the 80s and low 90s, lows in the 60s and low 70s. That hot weather will stick around for a couple days after that. I'm Rob Ferret, filling in for Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Rob Ferret filling in for Joy Cardine today. Coming up after 7:30, the State Capitol Report continues. We'll look at Wisconsin's economic outlook, the job situation, the housing market, and beyond. That's coming up after 7:30. Right now, talking to Charles Franklin, political scientist and pollster at Marquette University. We were talking about his latest polls in the U.S. Senate seat. Your poll, Charles Franklin, also asked about whether we think the recall process should change in Wisconsin. What did Wisconsinites have to say about that?
Yeah, this was an interesting question and one that was particularly provoked by the exit polls on recall night, which showed 60% wanting to restrict it to malfeasance in office and 10% more saying no recall under any circumstances. So that 70% number was pretty attention-getting. We don't see it as high as that, though we ask a somewhat different question. But the advantage is we ask this question first in January, and so we can compare opinion now with opinion as it stood in January and see what effect it had. What we asked was, do you think the recall should be changed to apply only in cases of criminal wrongdoing? So that's a fairly strong standard. Or should it be left as it is with no specific requirements? Back in January, 53% wanted to keep it as it is, and 43% wanted to change it for crime only. But when we asked it in June, those numbers had practically reversed. Just 44% wanted to keep it as it is, and half, 50%, said it should be applicable only in cases of criminal conduct. So I think we do have some real movement there. A net change of 16 points is substantial movement, though maybe not as overwhelming as the 70% from the exit polls suggested.
Why do you reckon that changed?
Well, I think partly it's a matter of arguments that were made during the campaign. Partly it's also that there is, whether it's the exit polls or ours, some clear expressions by at least some voters that recall should be really exceptional in their use. And what does it mean to be exceptional? We've had a fair number of Senate recalls over recent years here, in some cases for criminal charges, but in others, cases of policy disagreement. And so here we are now, having just gone through these last 18 months, confronting the question a little more seriously.
Speaking of recalls, they're not quite done yet. There's a recount going on in one of the Senate seat recalls. What's the latest news on that?
Yeah, this is the 21st Senate district between Senator Van Wengard and the Democratic challenger, John Lehman. In that, we had 72,000 votes cast, more or less, and the difference was 834 votes. After 2 days of recounting at the end of last week, Van Wengard had gained 4 votes, and there was no net change for Lehman. This is fairly typical of recounts. They rarely change very many votes. And in this case, the margin of 800 votes is actually 1.1 percentage points. That's a lot to change. But part of the issue is you validate it, you gain confidence that this count was correct and that the ballots were legitimately cast. So we'll see, but still got some counting to do before that one's wrapped up.
Turning back to your poll now, there are a couple other points I wanted to get to. First of all, you asked if people wanted to see more partisan cooperation among their elected officials. Do we want that?
Overwhelmingly. 84% say they would like to see cooperation between the parties. And we offered what I thought was a fairly attractive alternative. We talk these days a lot about parties standing for things, real principles that matter. So our alternative was, or should parties stand for different things, even if it means they don't cooperate? Mm-hmm. Still, 84% picked cooperation. Now, people were less optimistic about whether it will happen. And we were polling just after the Brot summit at the governor's mansion. But we found 55% thought that cooperation could actually happen, 45% not. Republicans were a little more positive or optimistic about that, 61% thinking it could happen, 58% of Democrats, of independents thought it could. Democrats were the most pessimistic at 48%.
Do you think it can happen in Wisconsin? Are there issues that lawmakers can cooperate on?
There are a few issues where it is possible. And actually, if you go back to January 2011, the first month before the budget repair bill, there were votes that garnered 3 or 4 or sometimes more Democratic votes on Republican legislation. So it's possible at that level. Over the controversial things, not so much. I think the real issue is, will either side deliberately choose to craft some legislation where there is that possibility of cooperation, or will they simply move ahead with their own partisan agendas and accuse the other side of not cooperating?
Supporting cooperation for the other side.
Exactly. And that is the thing. When we say 84% of us would like to see cooperation, that's probably true. Most of us would. It's when it's our issue that might be compromised away that we all have our own little greater difficulty agreeing to that.
Your poll also asked about this kind of minor sideshow election, the presidential race with a vote in November. I know nobody's really has it on their radar, but what did Wisconsinites say about that one?
Yeah, and here again we see the split decision that we saw in the governor's recall as well. In our latest poll, Obama continues his lead there, 49-43, a 6-point lead. Just before the recall, we had that at 8 points. The exit polls had it at 7 points. So I think for those three different sources of data, it's pretty reasonable to believe that's a single mid-single digit lead for Obama, which has been consistent in his lead. The race has tightened a bit over the last several months.
Does that presidential race affect the Senate race or vice versa?
I think in November it may. Or actually both affecting each other, mm-hmm. because they do deal with the national issues rather than the state issues. Though coattails are vastly overstated, I think. Probably the biggest effect is November presidential elections are always our highest turnout elections. So we should be very close to 3 million turnout as opposed to the 2.6 million that turned out in the recall, for example.
Does that help one side more than another?
Well, the conventional wisdom is that Democrats are advantaged a little bit by that, and we see that in our data. When you go from all registered voters to the most likely to vote, Republicans gain 2 or 3 points from that. So if you can raise the turnout among people who are registered to vote but might stay home, then often that does help Democrats some. However, it can be overstated, and it doesn't necessarily apply in every race.
I hate to hit you with this with just a minute or so to go, but the Supreme Court may give us a decision maybe this morning on that health care thing that everybody's talking about. Any quick thoughts on that?
Well, this is the huge thing for policy and for going forward. You know, it could come today. It could come Wednesday or Thursday. There's, as I understand it, about 9 cases still to be handed down in this last week. So often the court likes to leave the biggest for the last. So we'll see if it's today or a little bit later. When we asked about that question, we saw roughly equal numbers of people saying they wanted the whole law upheld or the whole law overturned, slightly more saying the whole law overturned. And about 19% said that they'd like only the individual requirement to buy health insurance struck down. So our state's divided over the health care reform law as well.
No surprise there.
No, not much.
When's the next Marquette poll due out?
We'll be out in early July.
All right. Charles Franklin, once again, thanks for joining us up here in the studio.
Thank you.
That's Charles Franklin. He is a visiting professor of law and public policy at Marquette University, co-developer and contributor to pollsandvotes.com. More importantly, he's a frequent guest on this very program. More State Capitol Report coming up after the news. We'll look at Wisconsin's economic outlook, jobs, housing, and more. That's coming up after 7:37. I'm Rob Ferret. I'm filling in for Joy Cardine this week. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.